Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be. All around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Joe Montaldo, over the years, has become a friend of mine. And although we've never met face-to-face, we've spent a lot of time on telephone and Skype together. Joe owns one of the networks and one of the FM stations that carries the Kevin Smith Show. And he is also the founder and director of iCar. And we've talked about a lot of weird stuff over the years here on the Kevin Smith Show. It's a delight to have him back with us this evening. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Wow, thank you very much, Kevin. I always love being here. Okay, where's that coming from? That's weird.
I don't know. I don't know what's coming there or what's weird.
Okay.
But,
okay. Wait, why am I getting that weird echo?
Because you have your Skype volume in your settings, your Skype settings too high.
That's weird. I ain't never got an echo on this before. Hold on.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, while Joe plays with his controls here, I told you we have a lot of weird stuff happens when Joe comes on the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Still hearing myself. Okay, this is weird now. Guys, I do radio all the time. I never had it happen before. That's kind of strange.
Well, you have it set for broadcast.
Oh, I must have it on something. Well, actually, this is just a personal. Okay, there it goes. It went away. Okay. Okay. Well, we're not going to worry about it. Then it went away.
All right. Very good. All right, Joe. First of all, we have new listeners all the time, so they won't know what iCar is. Tell them.
Well, iCar is the International Community for Alien Research. We are now currently the largest UFO alien abduction organization in the world, with a standing membership over 40,000. We have a caseload somewhere between 15 and 18,000 investigated cases. No one's actually sat down and counted them in the last 5 years, so we'd actually have to go back and do it. We'd have to actually put a couple of computers together to actually do that. But we have the largest alien abduction database in the world. We have the largest group of contactees in the world. And we have the largest UFO and alien abduction organization in the world. What we do is collect data and do comparison studies. We have a large group of contactees because we like to run a lot of different type programs, like the blood type study, the gray reptilian human questionnaires, the job studies. There's at least another dozen studies listed on the iCar research site. There's actually a separate site set up for research. You can go to iCar1.com. It'll take you right to a research site, or you can go over to UFOonTheCover.com and just click on iCar research, and it'll take you there. There's a whole list of studies there. We're constantly changing, manipulating things, getting things in a more scientific, more coherent fashion. So when someone comes up and says, well, why do y'all think the grays are like that, Joe? And then I can say, well, you know, this is based on about 5,500 cases. And this is why, because this many cases showed this, and that's why we believe that. And it's a much more coherent way to do things. It's frankly, it's a much more honest way to do things, because when you're shooting off the hip with 50 or 100 contactees, and you have no base for what they actually are, they really contactees or not, then you don't really know if you can get an accurate data. See, we've put what we call a criteria list together of commonalities amongst contactees. Some of this list we've made public over the last 10 years, the last 14 years. Some of it we have not. Even I got to be honest with you, even some of this stuff, only a couple of the top directors even get privy to, because frankly, and this is the honest truth of the matter, if we were to give out the 40 or 50% of abduction criteria we keep to ourselves, we'd never know who was lying and telling the truth ever. You would be able to hoax and lie to any researcher on the planet with that data. They would never know. They would think you were a legitimate alien abductee, and that would be all there is to it. But I mean, it's basically what we do, and we offer a lot of support for contactees. Let me rephrase that. We are a sounding board for abductees, contactees, and keepers. What that really means is we're here to help you any way we can. But what I've learned over the years, especially for abductees and even early contactees, they need someone to talk to, someone that's not going to say, hey, you're a freak, oh, your mama dropped you in your head or whatever. Well, it's true. You know, they need somebody to talk to, and that's what we're here for. And we listen. And by the way, every director at iCar, every director, every assistant director, anybody who has any inkling or has it going to ever see your data is under a non-disclosure, a legally binding non-disclosure agreement. We're not like MUFON. We don't play around with that stuff. We're not going to take the chance that your data is going to end up in somebody's book, and then your boss is going to go, "Well, John, I never knew this about you there, buddy. Guess what? You're fired." So we don't even want to take those chances. We make stuff public, but only from the people who want to be public. Trust me, there are a lot of contactees coming forward and a lot more that want to be on the air and talk about this. So, you know, for the people who want to keep it to themselves, keep it close to their heart, that's fine. You never have to worry about us giving out any of your data. None of our directors would ever do that. You'd have to pretty much pull their fingernails out to even get them to talk about it.
All right, so if somebody's listening that is a contactee or an abductee, how do they get in touch with ICAR to talk to somebody?
Well, you can go to either one of the main sites. There's ICAR1.com, which is the newer site. There's also ICAR1.homestead.com. That's the older site. There's a lot of stuff on each site. That's why we kept the old one up, because it's there. There's actually yet another site coming in, but both sites have all the information you need on it. You can also go to UFO on the cover and find it, or frankly, just type in my name. It will always lead you back to one of the ICAR sites. All of our radio stations, pages, all of our radio show, station shows, all have an ICAR banner on them, so it's just click and go, click and go, click and go. And we make it really easy. There's, if you want to submit an application to organization, that's there. If you want to submit a report, that's there. If you're looking for help, fill out, I'm glad Kevin brought this up, because frankly, I'm going to be blunt with everybody. If you want someone in the organization to speak to you, okay, go fill out the form. Yes, it does take some time. It's quite a long questionnaire. It does ask a lot of pertinent and a lot of personal information. But if you're not willing to give up that information, frankly, you're wasting any of our directors' time to talk to you. Because I'm going to be blunt, we get a lot of people every day wanting to talk to everybody in the organization on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And to keep this on the up and up and keep, you know, because we all have to have regular jobs. You know, we all have careers besides what we do here. So, you know, we have X amount of free time that we're giving to this, and we want to make sure the people who are needing it are getting it, and we're not wasting ours for our own personal agendas that we have. So, you know, we ask people, just fill out the form, submit the form, and then start writing to us. You know, write to me personally, write to abduction@AT&T.net, write to ICAR, write to all of them. Because what happens here is there's lots of directors, and there's several eight places that your forms can be picked up. Any one of those directors will pick it up and respond to it. Actually, the one who's been the busiest lately would be Christina Knowles out of Massachusetts. She's our mass director. And actually, she's been quite busy just answering a couple of hundred emails over the last couple of weeks. But you can get in touch with us. We just ask if you're serious to fill out the form. You know, because if you really want to sit down and talk with a director and spend several hours, even actually it'll probably end up being several days on the phone, then, you know, show them that you really want to do it. Mm-hmm. Because, frankly, there's lots of people filling them out, and other people want to call you and just talk to you and not take the effort. All of our directors and all of the investigators really want that sheet there when they're talking to you so that they can ask questions.
All right. Now, not only are you the founder and director of ICAR, and not only do you own a radio network and you got a radio station, I believe, in New Orleans, right?
Yep, New Orleans. Nolens.
Nolens?
Nolens, baby. We in Nolens.
Bon Ton Relais, yeah?
Relais, that's right.
Yeah. But look, not only that, you do, I think, two radio shows. You're a broadcaster, one of them in the paranormal genre and one of them in the political genre.
Yep, I can't believe I got into politics either. Boy, that was
I want to talk about that for a minute.
Good, because my co-host said you got to come on with us one night.
Me? Moi?
Because you remember last time I had you and I and Jerry Pittman on, that show is still a highly rated show. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, while we're on this, there's a show where Kevin, myself, and Jerry Pittman were discussing politics. Now, Kevin and I's politics are not that far apart, but I got to say, Jerry's is a really good show. You should go listen to it. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun doing it. And it's still, to this day, one of the episodes of Voice of the People, actually. And it's still very highly rated. I think it's 2.5 million downloads now. Y'all should go check it out. It was I'll tell you this much. You won't leave not entertained.
That's true. But of course, I don't ever talk any politics on this show. On this show. But here's what I want to talk about. You told me something today that you probably didn't realize, that you were loading a gun for me here, and I'm going to fire it.
Okay. Oh, Lord, here we go.
No, well, look. All of the paranormal shows. I don't care. You know, paranormal UFOs, paranormal / UFO. All of the world of the strange and unexplained shows. Does not matter who's doing them. Doesn't matter what station, where they are. They're all struggling. They struggle to stay in business. So you're doing this show, and by struggle, I mean, you know, it's in some cases, you know, I mean, it's like really against the wall struggle, but in other cases, it's, you know, yeah, paying the bills, but just barely. And so now you start this political show, and don't name any of the sponsors or anything like that, because I'm not going to give them free advertising. Okay, but all of a sudden you start doing this political show, and the money starts rolling in on that.
And it's a shame. I mean, the Paranormal Radio Network has got to be close to 10 years old, now, at least 8 years old. And frankly, it costs me $30,000-$40,000 a year every year, sometimes more than that, to be honest with y'all. Now, last year it started getting closer to breaking even, but nowhere near it. Since I introduce politics to the network, and this is a primarily a paranormal radio network, the station has actually started making a profit. Not a lot, not enough to let me quit my day job as a contractor, but it is no longer coming out of my bank account, which to me is just as good. I want to go do backflips out in the street. All because I added a 3-hour political show to the network. And I'll be frank with y'all, I've been told things by sponsors and stuff that are willing to pay bigger money to sponsor particular shows if I change the format of my radio network. So basically, if I'm willing to sell out to the man to say I can actually probably make a living at this. That's tough, guys, because I got into this for personal reasons. The station, to be frankly with you, frank with everyone, the station is just a creation from both iCar and when I used to host Wake Up USA. We needed an outlet besides mainstream media, and you can't count on getting on C2C all the time. So, you know, you've got to have a venue, you know. So I got into it for those reasons. And I wanted to give other people a way to talk about it, you know, so that they had an audience, a pre-built-in audience, you know, to tell people about what's going on and what they're doing. But since in this last year, since we've added politics, I have to say, if I would add another 2 or 3 political shows to the network and maybe change the format slightly, and frankly, I was asked if I would take all of our paranormal shows and put them on after 10 o'clock.
Now, here's my point. Everybody in this audience, everybody listening, enjoys paranormal and UFO and world of the strange and unexplained type shows, or you wouldn't be tuned in listening. But, folks, and I love you all, but the vast, 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 almost total majority of the audience of paranormal type shows are either dead broke, or, and that's just a handful, are absolutely tightwad stingy.
Boy, are they too, man. Lord, Kevin, it's like pulling...
Now, see, some of you are saying, I'm never going to listen to you again. Okay, bye. Because I just told you the truth, and if the shoe fits you, just wear it. If it doesn't fit you, don't worry about it. I wasn't talking about you.
That's right.
But the vast, vast majority of the folks in this genre are tightwad stingy. And, you know, you love the show. Some of you used to love me before I told you the truth. And you love this show. You love Joe's show. You love whatever show. You love it, and you will not support it. Now, there are two ways. Joe just mentioned it. There's only two ways to pay the bills. One is we sell out to the man. And then they decide the content of the show. And everything you love about that show disappears. Okay, it totally changes. But that's one way to pay the bills. Yeah. I gave that up in 2006, 2007. Because, well, won't get into because why, but I gave that up. No ads. Okay? The only other way is for you folks to support what you like financially. And if you don't, it disappears. And when I talk about this, I get people saying, well, you know, the Kevin Smith Show's about to go under because he's talking about, you know, all that. Look, I've been here longer than George Norrie's been on Coast to Coast. All right? And I'm not saying anything bad about George. I'm telling you, though, I'm a dinosaur, folks. I've been here longer than he's been at Coast.
I didn't realize that. We've been on air because I've been on just about, mm-hmm. Oh, man, hell, I didn't realize that. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
And we make it. But what I'm saying, folks, is pay attention to what Joe just told you. The instant that he put politics on, the money starts rolling in. But what about you folks that love paranormal and UFO? I mean, are you going to let it die? It's going to. It is dying. It is. There's filmmakers getting out of the business. I talked to one the other day. It said he's working on his last film for our genre. That's it. Internet radio stations switching format, going away from it because they got to pay the bills. So, you know, you're going to let it die? While you sit on your hands and say, I sure like that show. Or are you going to support it? And, you know, there's only a couple of ways there for the money to come in that has to come in order to pay the bills and keep this type of broadcasting on the air.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that kills me, Kevin, because, you know, most people can afford $5 or $10. I got to be honest about this. If it wouldn't be for the big donations, this would just be an absolute disaster out of my pocket. But what gets me is you know, I know $5 or $10, I have a huge listening audience on UFO Undercover. So if even 1% of that audience was to donate $5, I could probably pay for the station for the whole year.
Listen, if I got $1 from every listener on the planet that listens to this show, I'd be set for life.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, it's hard. But I do, and I don't want, for everybody who makes donations, I want to tell y'all thank you while we're here.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, for all y'all guys that make $100,000, $500,000 donation, I want to tell you thank you. For everybody who gives me $5, even a dollar, I'm happy, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay? It's just, the point being is, there's very few of those $5 or $10 donations.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see them.
And you need those.
Yeah, and really, it's like anything else. It's the mass that makes the difference.
Yeah.
And what happens is, you know, because really and truly, if I was to get the sponsors I want, there's three big sponsors I'm talking to right now. If I was to get what I wanted, or if I was to give them what they wanted for the money,
Joe,
I wanted.
You'll have to tell us on the other side of this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo, got a flash message from, well, I won't say who or from where, but I got a flash message during that break that said I was insulting my audience. No, I'm not. And if you feel insulted, it's because the shoe fit. I'm not angry at anybody. I just told you the truth about the true state of things in this world of broadcasting to paranormal UFO audiences. It's just a fact. Or Joe, maybe I overstated it.
To be frank about it, I mean, both of us, and we both know this, we could probably sell the shows and do much better off and let a network take them over. Mm-hmm. I know they've been sniffing around the shows for a while. So the thing about it is, you know, we could do it, or we could go in with like Sirius or one of the others and get on and just do their format, you know, because, you know, see, oh, by the way, I hear Art Bell's going to Sirius. Yep. He's going to be coming back, by the way. But anyway, enough about that.
No, that's
see,
fine.
He's somebody could get his own way, but we won't.
You know, yeah, we wouldn't. But here's the thing. Everybody has to pay for that.
Yes,
and, you know, we're trying to broadcast where it's free to listen to everybody. Everybody that wants to listen can listen. It's absolutely free. But we provide some additional things for those who, you know, become members. But even if you say, well, okay, you got all these members. No, I don't have all these members. There is not even a handful out of an audience of millions that are willing to be members and pay to support the show. It's a very small amount, but I mean, it's just a drop in the bucket. And we have a donate button. Now, we get people who donate each month. And I appreciate that. I really appreciate it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about all those folks out there that, whether we're talking about this show or Joe's show or any of the many of the hundreds of other shows that are out there broadcasting in this genre, you enjoy it, you love it, as long as it's free. But to ask you for a dollar is like asking, you know, for your firstborn. And I mean, seriously. And it's that, more than anything, that's killing off the genre. And it is the genre of information, good, high-quality information. It is dying. It is, you know. Now, there's a proliferation of shows that I call hobby jock shows, and they all get upset with me, too. But you know what I'm talking about, don't you, Joe?
Oh, yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. Most of them shouldn't be on the air. And then we've got, whole networks now that they're just software programs that now allow just literally thousands, which, hey, look, I actually get shows from those big pools, but in the end, when you've got, 500 shows on one network, you're wasting your time. Ain't mm-hmm. nobody going through all of that. Most people are going to get burnt out on the first five or six and end up going somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It gets to be too much. And frankly, the overall quality, not of the audio, but the overall quality of the information is, I feel like most of the time I'm wasting my time. Anytime I go looking for new shows, I got to be honest, I'm looking for two new shows right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like I literally spend sometimes weeks just going through drudge of please, somebody with some talent show up. Or yeah. Someone who just has, you don't even have to have talent, you just got to have the will or the knowledge, or I don't know what it is. But
it's got to be a passion, and yeah. People have to know you really care about it, but it's got to be more than a passion. You got to have good information. Yeah. And or at least a format where you can dig into the information and try to find if there's any good. But the genre is dying from a lack of support, financial support, and dying from an overload of crap broadcasts. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to go, I'm going to be here, I guess, till the ship goes down.
Well, how many paranormal shows we got on TV right now? I lost count.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, how many of them are actually good and tell you anything? Most of them are like reenactments or let's try to scare the poop out of you. There doesn't seem to be any research-based shows what is ectoplasm? What is a ghost? What is a UFO? Mm-hmm. I guess because that kind of stuff doesn't make it on TV, huh? It's too boring.
Well,
that's my favorite stuff, too.
Yeah, but that's another thing. There's an overload of sci-fi so that people are just kind of burned out on the real stuff. You know, if the real stuff is not spooky and scary and exciting and it's a roller coaster ride like the sci-fi, then they prefer the fiction. But anyway, we're going to move on. I just wanted to point out, Joe had no idea I was going to bring this up. He mentioned to me when we talked on the telephone, or we talked on Skype, he just mentioned to me that he had added this political show and that the money had started rolling in based on that. And I wanted to use it as an example because I want everybody in our audience to understand, yes, I'm here, Joe's here, we're going to be here for the long haul, but the haul will be shorter than it would have been.
Help out.
Yeah, it will be shorter than it would have been unless people that are enjoying it and like it decide to support what they like. Because, look, advertisers are impossible to deal with. They want to control. Here's the deal. I'll say this and then we'll move on, okay? I promise. The deal with an advertiser for a show like this one is they want to control the content of the show because they're nervous about all that stuff we talk about. They're nervous about, like last night, we're talking about stuff we got kicked off the air, okay? Now, for me, that's just confirmation we hit the target. for an advertiser, they don't like it. And so they don't want to sponsor shows like this. But the ones who will, the ones who are willing to, they're few and far between, but when you find them, they want to moderate. They want you to become more moderate in what you how you approach things. And so if you're not willing to bend to having the content controlled, watered down, and made useless, if you're not willing to bend to that, you're not going to get those sponsors. Therefore, the only hope you've got are the people who are benefiting by listening. And again, it's not just this show. It's all the shows in this genre. The entire genre is suffering from this. Because you got, like Joe says, you know, you got the ones, the commercial ones, and they've bent. And their content is moderated. And when they get too close to the truth, their producers pull that show and say, no, you can't do that. You got to do something else. It happens. It happened. I had Bill Burns here. I don't know if you remember that show, Joe, but I had Bill Burns here from UFO Hunters.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I said, did you guys ever run across information or videotape anything that hit the target, too close to the center, and the producers wouldn't let you put it on the air? He said, oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, they don't want any of that controversial stuff on there. They want you to become just a middle-of-the-line host. Just do your job, host a show. Don't be controversial. Don't ask any tough questions. Don't allow for any really controversial information to slip out. And just basically do a monotone show, which is probably 90% of everything that's out there, both on TV and radio and internet. It's just a sad state of affairs. See, I like hosting, animated, alive, get involved with the show. It's one of the things that gets me in trouble. It's what gets the host in trouble. But,
it is.
You know, like the guy who brought the dolphin on the show. I mean, the guy who came on one of the shows that slept with dolphins.
He tried to come on this show.
I know. I was floored. I cut him off, by the way, but I was floored.
Yeah. When I found that out, I wrote and I said, "Nah." Well, actually, the producer did, and I said, "Nah, we didn't know that, and we're not going to have you on the air." So
that was a little much. We do a lot of things in radio, just not that.
I'll do a lot of controversial stuff, but having sex with dolphins is not one of them.
Elizabeth, that question you just sent me real quick, because I know Kevin and I are getting ready to move on. We do have free slots on the network, but I'm honest with you. To get a free slot on the network, you're going to have a built-in audience, at least 250,000 or better. Really, for the two slots that are open, it's going to probably have to be 500,000 because there's already that many there in that slot. But we do also have paid slots that start off at $100 a month and up. And frankly, they take care of everything. All you do is get your guest and pick up the phone or pick up the Skype. That's it. You don't have to do anything else. It's I call it idiot radio because anybody can do it. All you got to do is have some talent and have some thing. But, you know, if you want a good spot, those cost money, and or you have to have a good audience. Mm-hmm. You know, because, I mean, let's be honest about it.
Well, you got to pay the bills.
Yeah. In the old days, you know, we didn't care, but these days we actually got good shows on the network, and we are looking for good shows. And if you got a good show, or if you think you have a show that you really think can slay an audience, send it to me. I'll take a listen to it. I love, you know, and if you don't hear back from me, well, it just means I didn't think it would fit.
Yeah. Well, if you guys, I mean, you've started politics. If you ever start doing a rock and roll show or open a slot for a rock and roll show, I'll fix you up there.
Well, actually, we're going to do that. We're going to have...
No kidding, really?
No, I'm serious. Actually, we're doing a couple of things, but one of the shows, we haven't decided who's going to do it yet or anything, but we're opening a slot just for music. You know, just so somebody can come on. Because like on the News on the Flip Side show, which is the one we host on Saturday, we've been adding segments to that show. We've got Global News on it now, and we've got Rob doing the science tech. And then we just added a sports segment to News on the Flip Side, by the way, with one of our hosts, Chip Plesher from Mind Cemetery, is going to be doing it. Mm-hmm. And Tree Sheridan, who's the host of Global Focus, she does a lot of stuff on the show. And she's also kind of like another host, to be honest with you. She does commentary for us, and she does... new segments, but she's just kind of, after about the hour and a half in, she becomes like an additional host, which the show is fantastic, guys. It's just, you better know your politics if you're going to call us.
I'm glad you're doing it and not me.
Well, it's tough, but I needed it because I'm like you on UFO Undercover, politics are banned. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed on the show, period. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into who does what, and frankly, I don't think politics has any place in ufology itself or in a paranormal field. Everybody should be able to get along because their politics shouldn't make a difference.
Right.
But as far as the state of our rest of life goes, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to have some kind of out somewhere.
See, and that's where you and I are different. That's where I'm so unplugged. I don't care what the Democrats are doing. I don't care what the Republicans are doing. I don't care if Daffy Duck starts a party. You know, I'm unplugged. I don't care. I know I'm going to be lied to. I'm going to get more taxes and less freedom. It doesn't matter who's in power.
Well, you got that right on the head, too, buddy, because that's really how it is. Mm-hmm. And the bad part is the majority of the listeners feel the same way you do. They really do. I mean, they're just like, what are we going to do? All we're trying to do is get them fired up. But still, you are limited to what you can do these days. After these last four elections, I'm not even sure who's supposed to be president anymore. Good news.
I don't even care. Because regardless, I know I'm going to get shafted. So, you know.
They do it, too. They love to give it to us. If you're not a multimillionaire, just planned on bending over. Yeah. And hope the poor slob feels bad for you that day and has some Vaseline, because if not.
Well, I want to move on to, actually move back to our genre here on this show, and the ICAR genre. The other night I had a guest on who was talking about, I think she said it was her dad, had O negative blood. And I told her, I said, on the air, I said, I'll tell you who, she didn't know what that meant or what she, whether it was significant. I said, well, I know who knows. And she said, who? I said, Joe Montaldo. You need to get in touch with him. They did a blood study, a blood group, blood type study. And so let me ask you, is there anything significant about the O negative blood?
Well, there's a lot significant about it from science point of view. I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, from the UFO, alien, that sort of thing.
Well, it's significant in the fact that more than 50% of the contactees on file have O negative blood.
Oh, okay. We have a break taking over. We're going to come back to O negative in just a second. Okay, so we're talking about the O negative blood, and you were saying 50% of the contactees that you have in your database.
Well, actually, it's around 46%. When we originally did the study, it was about 36% of everybody in that group, which was about 3,000 contactees that had taken it. 36% were O negative. About 65% were Rh negative, which, by the way, in case y'all notice, ladies and gentlemen, the worldwide population of Rh negative is 15%. Okay, O negative itself is only 7% of the world's population, but total, all the Rh negatives only make up 15%. But yet, in the contactees, make up almost 70. Now, part two of the study was we just finished, which puts us up right around 7,800 contactees, and in that study, it bumped the Rh negative up to about 46-47%. When you add in everybody, it's a solid 70-73% of all contactees are Rh negative, or at least all the ones we've interviewed. Now, by saying that, it's not just ICAR contactees that have taken that. Most all the famous contactees, every abducting contactee who's been on my show has taken it, and I've had more than 100 of them on my show that have taken it. So just that's the famous ones. And then we've had other groups that we've worked with. Matter of fact, tomorrow night, my guest is going to be Mary Rodwell. We've worked with several other groups around. Anybody who asks about blood type, we ask them to give us our information. So that's where we are right now. And it is roughly about 72% of all contactees are Rh negative. By the way, just because you're Rh positive doesn't mean you're not an abductee, because that still is 28% of them that are. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's skewed. It should be the other way around.
It's exactly... It's the ratios of the world population flipped over.
Yeah, and so it's a very weird thing. Now, what's even more important about that is most people don't notice, but Rh negative is not an evolutionary thing. In other words, humans didn't evolve with Rh negative. It only appeared 25 to 35,000 years ago out of the blue, mind you. Mm-hmm. No scientist today can answer you why Rh negative or where Rh negative came from. They don't know. It's a very strange thing. One, in case y'all didn't know, Rh means Reese's. It's Rh positive people share a 2% gene. They share a common 2% with the rhesus monkey. That's why it's Rh positive. Rh negative don't, by the way. There's no rhesus monkey in there, so it's not even that. Then on top of that, in case y'all forgot, in the old days in America, you used to have to get a blood test to get married, and that's because people with Rh negative and people with Rh positive couldn't have kids. They had to actually invent a shot for that. You go get a special shot, and then you could have kids. Maybe. Some reason or another, nature has kind of moved us along, and we don't seem to need the shot as much, or maybe it's not as big a problem as it used to be. But Mother Nature would not have created something that were going to kill 15 to 20% of all the babies on the planet. That seems counterproductive to Mother Nature in general. So you got to kind of wonder, where did this come from? Then on top of that, Rh negative is the purest blood known to man. Rh O negative is the purest type of blood known to man. They have no idea it's pure. It's the ones we use to do all the research with and find everything. It's also the only universal donor. O negative can be given to anybody on the planet. Anybody, even if you got AB negative, you can still take O negative. But O negative people can only take O negative. So, you know, I love when ABs tell me, I've got the rarest blood type. Technically, that's right, because you're only 2% of the world's population. But since you can take O negative blood, that gives you a 9% blood bank. O negative only has a 7% blood bank, so technically their blood type is rarer than yours is, because they can only take O negative. It's a very strange thing. But without it, without O negative, all the last wars we fought, we'd have had major problems, because now instead of having to match blood types, they can just, you know, send O negative. As for emergencies.
Right. Now, let me tell you a little bit about her story, just briefly. She is beginning to have memories of things that she didn't go into details about, but she's beginning to have memories of what she thinks are military and military and alien abduction, MILABs. And so I asked her, I said, okay, well, you have like a long history of in your family being in the military? And she said no, which, as you know, many of them do, not always, but many of them do. And she said no, and she said the only thing, she said, you know, my dad served 4 years in the military in World War II, but only that, and, you know, no long history. But he was O negative, and she said, and I'm A positive. And she said, I don't know if there's anything significant about the, you know, the O negative. So let me ask you, she's got a dad who had O negative. Is it possible that they left him alone but took her for some reason?
It is possible that they left her alone and took him. Well, okay, that's partially true. Probably what really happened is he was probably taken as a young man, probably up until somewhere after puberty, maybe into his mid-20s, and had decided, okay, he's not what we're looking for this program. At that time, they would have dismissed his abductions. But, and I tell us to contact these all the time, just because they quit do not mean they won't take your children. Mm-hmm. Because sooner or later, you know, they're going to come take your kids and see if they need to be part of this program. Truth of the matter is, they probably have been taking them since they were a child. But still, until such a time as they don't need you, they'll take you. But, and I've said this a million times, 99% of all contactees on the planet will never know. They'll never even have an idea. They'll always think there was something a little strange, a little weird about their lives. They may even be drawn to the paranormal or to fairies or spirits or dragons or all sorts of stuff, but never really understand why. They just got these weird things. But we do believe it only happens in family lives. We honestly don't even believe anymore that there is such a thing as a one-time random abduction. And the truth of that is, I have never met a contactee to date that sooner or later did not have another experience, period. And I've talked to Travis Walton about this a couple of times, and he elates to having something else. Matter of fact, him and I discussed that maybe he may have had a partial MILAB at the end of his case. Because his case sounds so much like one of the typical handoffs where the Greys pick you up and they do whatever they're going to do, but for some reason, instead of putting you back, they hand you off to the government to put back. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. It's a very strange phenomena indeed. Mm. But it does happen, and it's just something about his case that seems to follow suit in there. But he's probably the only real stand that, I mean, Pascagoula boys said they've had multiple contacts. It's the Wiener brothers said they did from the Allagash cases. Pretty much every contactee that was a one time, when you really got into it or put them in regression, you found out that it wasn't. To me, there is no such thing as a one-time abductee. It may be in Travis's case. Maybe it's possible. I just don't see why. And like I asked Travis Walton, ladies and gentlemen, did you not think they knew you were there? Really, you have an alien spacecraft on the side of a mountain, and you don't think they know there's a truck with its headlights coming down the side of a mountain? Really, I mean, come on. They're familiar with the planet. They've been here before. We know their technology is advanced, and see that one sentence took Travis so far back, it actually freaked him out a little bit, Kevin, because he didn't know how to take it. He was like, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, Kevin, Travis, they obviously knew you were coming, dude." I said, "How noisy is that damn truck? They probably heard you coming. Probably didn't even need any senses to hear you coming. Big bright lights in the middle of the forest and on the top of a mountain where nobody's at. God, they seen and heard him coming for miles, and they've got advanced senses. They knew he was coming." Mm-hmm. They were watching him when he stopped. Some people say he got too close to the ship. If that was the case, there would have been no more Travis Walton. You know, we wouldn't have this conversation, because there would have been nothing to put back. They would have just disintegrated his bappy butt. But instead, they picked him up and took him and handed him off and put back. Because the way he was put back is just not the way the Greys or any of the aliens that we deal with put anybody back. That's way sounds like military abduction stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what it looks like. Yeah.
All right. I hope she's listening tonight. And if she is, you've heard the answer to the question. If you have more questions, you need to get in touch with Jill Montaldo or with ICAR. You might get in touch with Joe, but you need to be in touch with ICAR and do the questionnaire.
And I'll tell everybody listening tonight, this is a Kevin Smith exclusive, okay?
All right.
If you really want to get in touch with me, Facebook.
Facebook.
Don't tell everybody else, people. Don't tell everybody else. But it's sometimes, because I do a lot of times when I'm building websites or working on stuff or updating stuff for the station, I'll have my Facebook page open. If the box pops up while I'm sitting there, I will probably answer it. I'm bad about that. It's that ADD in me. Don't tell nobody else now.
No, it's an absolute secret. Only for the Kevin Smith Show audience.
That's right.
Take some calls?
Oh, I always love callers. Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to us, you ought to go over to icar1.homestead.com and look at the blood site study. Go to scroll down to where it says type O blood and look at South America. Look at South and Central America and actually the top of Canada and tell me what you see. It's very interesting.
All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Doc in Arkansas.
Hello, Doc.
Got in early tonight.
Yes, you did.
Well, I was going to call and ask you a question about the blood types tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, now, are they saying majority of the time that people with like O negative blood is more highly likely to see and stuff happen with extraterrestrial?
Actually, what we're saying is the majority of people who have taken the study that are already contactees and abductees have those blood types. As far as seeing UFOs, I got to be honest with you. If you're not a contactee, I don't think you're going to ever see a UFO. I got to be blunt about it. I have never met someone who has seen a UFO that under hypnosis wasn't an abductee. So I'm always blunt about those kind of things. But what I was talking about was the contactees themselves. The majority of them seem to be Rh negative, which is just an oddity. It's a weird thing since it just popped up out of nowhere. It was like the Rh negative was like introduced into our society about 25,000-30,000 years ago, out of nowhere, out of the blue. Just somewhere in the night, we decided that we needed Rh negative in our bloods. See, everybody forgets that for a long time, 100 million or so years, or maybe 2 million or so years, there was only A on the planet. I mean, there was only positive. There was A, B, and O, but there was only positive. There's no RH, no RH negative. And even O is fairly relatively new compared to the other two. But it's a strange thing. So, yeah, that's what I was talking about, just the abductees. People who see ghosties and UFO and stuff like that, we haven't actually ever tested. It'd be interesting to find out, though.
Okay, you got another question, Doc?
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering that, because, you know, with me, you know, like, I'm old negative, and, you know, like, you know, I mentioned to you before, Kevin, that I have a immorality in my blood that they don't know what it is, and and I've seen a lot of weird stuff and stuff in space and everything like this, and I was wondering about that question.
Yeah, well, what color eyes do you have, man?
Hazel green.
Yeah, go read the site. I'm not even going to say anything else to you. Do me a favor. Go over to home. Go over to icar1.homestead.com. Not to the icar1 site, but to the icar1.homestead.com. Look for the blood type study and go see what it says about green and hazel eyes and O negative. Man, odds are, it's. Let me put it this way. It's better than a 50% chance that you're a contact date. If we were going by Vegas betting, I would give you 65% odds that you're an abductee of some sort. You probably don't never know it, but you probably are. That's the whole point to all of these studies we've been doing. We have been looking for a way to find abductees without them coming forward. We know there's select things that the aliens are looking for in individuals and in family lines, and we've been tracking those down so that we can track down people who are outside of the normal groups that we would, you know, that are moving around. Because a lot of contactees will never know. They'll have experiences, but, and like I said earlier, they may even like a little paranormal, may even want to get involved, but they really don't know what's going on in their lives. And they just seem to be attracted to this, but for no real reason. But that's why it's in their blood. It's part of you, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, the guys there, and I'll give you guys a holler. I'll have to look you up on Facebook.
Sure, feel free, man, anytime.
All right,
it's one of my favorite subjects.
623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And you can ask Joe Montaldo your question. You can make a comment. It doesn't have to be about the blood type study, but it could be. Or maybe you think that Joe and I insulted the audience when we told you the truth. Some people can't take the truth, and they think the truth is an insult. And the truth is an insult in a society that's built on fiction and lies. But it's not intended as an insult. But it is an insult to those people who buy into the fiction and lies. So maybe you want to call us and tell us that we insulted you. Whatever. But the telephone number is 623-444-5889. You mentioned, Joe, the job studies. What is the job studies?
Well, this was a study that I think Heather Garish, our Nevada director, put this together. And this is to try it's more than just jobs. There's a lot more information into it. But what it's designed to do is to locate. We're looking for the similarities among contactees. It's really what it's about. We're seeing if there's like, do they prefer certain types of jobs? Do they like this? Do they like to be in the media industry or maybe firemen or lawyers or politicians? Because basically we found that contactees were on in every walk of life, but we've been kind of wondering if maybe they may be segments of the population that group together, because we've also learned that, you know, birds of a feather tend to flock together.
Mm-hmm.
So by learning that, we haven't got anything solid yet. Heather hasn't done the finals on it yet, so I hate to comment on that because she might smack me, but there is a lot of good information coming out. And I know November Hansen, who's in charge of all of ICAR's research programs that run along those lines. She's our Oregon State Director, and she's in charge of all the programs that run. She's overseeing all of that, and she's put up some good reports like she put out the Gray Report, which has a lot of interesting information and a lot of things in it that, you know, would go along the lines of abduction criteria. The Human Report we put out about 2 years ago, the Reptilian Report I've been going over, it's a very strange thing because in that particular
Before we get into the Reptilian Report, let's take this call,
okay,
and then we'll come back to that.
Oh, I love callers.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Hi, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria.
Hello, Haya.
Hi. Listen, I just turned it on and I was listening and I'm thinking, my God, I'm an A negative. Am I an A negative, when I was 6 years old, and I'm adopted as well.
Oh, shit. Wait, are you Canadian?
Pardon?
Are you from Canada?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Oh, my. Okay, go ahead. You need to get in touch with me on Facebook. It's nothing I can get into the show, but I couldn't even express to you how many abductees slash... what a word am I looking for?
Contactee.
And I'm blue-eyed.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is we've got a lot of people who had been put up for adoption or out of adoption agencies and stuff like that that are contactees in Canada, and much higher concentration in Canada than anywhere else. And there was a lot of other stuff that went along with that, a lot of other baggage. We actually have 4 or 5 directors up there that's all they do is talk to contactees who came out of orphanages.
It tells you how many there are up there,
actually. It's freaking.
Up until I was 6 years old, I used to suffer from earaches. I don't know why. My parents took me to every specialist they could think of. Nobody knew what was the problem. One day when I was 6 years old, it was just after my 6th birthday, it was in May, late May, I was woken up. I was a night owl. I've always been a night owl. Don't ask me why. Always happy. And I saw this little person outside, and of course, the type of temperament I am, I climbed down the tree, followed this child into the woods not far from us, and all of a sudden, I came across what it looked like a lighthouse in the middle of the woods, so I walked in, and it was all metallic. I wasn't scared. I was just curious. There was kind of a model light. It wasn't harsh or anything. I don't know the source. And I can't remember after that. But I woke up in the morning with leaves and dirt all over my feet. But since that day, I've never, ever, ever had an earache since.
Sounds like they fixed whatever the problem was. That's really what it sounds like. It's a strange thing because normally, it's a good possibility that you've had some type of contact. More than likely, it's probably been long-term life, but it's also a really high possibility that you've had some type of government contact as well. It seems to go hand in hand with everybody we deal with in Canada for some reason. Maybe it's because the Canadians are relaxed and let the Americans do what they want. I really don't know what it is. But for some reason, the caseload seems to be higher up there than even in the States, which I find odd. It's a really, really, really a strange thing. So, get in touch with me anytime. Because go back through your life and just kind of... get a journal out and anything that was odd, weird lights, weird sounds, weird smells.
I have seen, I guess you could call them UFOs, periodically all through my life. In 2007, I went down to East SETI, which is in south of Washington at James Gilliland Ranch, and I had, there was a major UFO that came across, and it was a spherical, it wasn't metallic, multicolored, and it looked like something was in it, but when it came over us, the energy just went right through me, completely. And it was like it affected me, it changed me. And every year I went down there, it was like, even James turned around one day and said, "Hi, you've been taken a few times, did you not know that?" And I said, "Well, I didn't really meet them that I can remember, but I do feel that I have a mission here, and don't ask me what."
Well, you're not going to know because you haven't gone through the awakening yet. What's strange about this, and I tell most people who find me, it's probably because they're going to start the awakening. The awakening is basically what happens is like seeing a UFO. This is why I always tell people, if you see a UFO, you're probably an abductee or contactee, because the image of the UFO is a trigger memory. Remember, ET never has to show itself. It flies all over this planet on a daily basis. Even the military doesn't see it. So there's no reason, even on an accident, for them to be seen. And it wouldn't be that often anyway. Even if there were accidents, they would be very far and few between, not all of these sightings and pictures. What happens is they like to leave a calling card, okay? And we call these trigger memories. And that's really what UFOs are. What they're doing is they're leaving you a hint that something just happened to you. Now, you can choose to ignore it. That's why they do it this way, because if you want to ignore it, or if you don't feel, if you're not in the right place in life where this could do more damage than good, then you can ignore it. Oh, I saw a UFO. I'm crazy. Or, you know, maybe I was flight, whatever. But you'll be able to play it off, or just put it to the side without it being a major problem for you. But if you're someone ready to start the awakening, then it will start to trigger memories. It'll start manifesting in dreams, sometime waking consciousness, but you'll start to see things, you'll start to understand things, you'll become much more driven. The bad part about this is when you go through the awakening, it tends to take over your life. Most people are, well, actually everybody I know has been better off for going through it, but still, it becomes part of your life. I mean, it's almost like you have to incorporate all of this into your life. So I tell people, don't go through the awakening unless they're ready for it. A lot of times it's just easier to hide it and to be ignorant. Bliss is ignorant, or that's ignorance is bliss sometimes.
That's for me. You've probably heard me say this on the show. I'm not afraid to know. I just don't care.
Well, because sometimes you're better off. And I tell this to people all the time. A lot of times it's just easier just to ignore it and not be part of it. And I tell this to people. You know, people come to me all the time for hypnosis, and I tell them, do you really want to know the truth? Or are you even ready for the truth? Because regardless if you think you're having a good contact, a bad contact, or an indifferent contact, somewhere in this long period of contact, there's going to be all of that. There's going to be both good and bad. Anyone who doesn't think that has never really been taken. So the stuff they do from puberty into your late 20s, early 30s is harsh. They're not trying to be mean. They're not even trying to be hateful. It's just part of the program they do. There's heavy breeding programs in there. There's a lot of abusive stuff where you do.
Well, I hope I was part of that.
You know, but so, and they wipe
no,
out.
No, wait, time out. Heavy breeding program. I want to find out. I hope I was part of that.
Well, they're into the breeding programs.
I'm kidding, right?
It never bothered me. I always, even as a child, I think I freaked my parents out. They wondered what sort of kid they ended up with, because when I was 3 years old, I was looking up in the sky and asking my parents, which planet did I come from?
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd be surprised how many kids actually do that.
Really?
I can't tell you how many parents will tell me stuff like, oh, I was standing there and my son looked up and said, oh, my bug-eyed friends are on the way, and then all of a sudden they can't remember 3 days and stuff.
Now, let me ask you this, Haya. We've talked about this before, but I'm an old guy. I don't remember stuff. But haven't you told me that you are either full blood or part First Nations?
They found out I was part Mi'kmaq and part Mohawk.
Okay.
Yes. Well, welcome to the nation. I'm an eighth Cherokee, which makes my son now 16th. At least I can still get my card. Yeah. Actually, you find that's in America, you'll find that quite a few of the contactees have Native American blood. But you'll also find something else that's odd. Places like the United States, Canada, parts of South America like Argentina, Brazil, and Australia, anywhere there was a mass migration tends to have a much higher concentration of abductees and contactees than, say, like Russia or Europe or China. And the reason why is because when they got the chance, they left. They were being persecuted is what it was. Abductees have a hard enough time trying to fit in everyday life within today's rules of life, which are much easier than they were, say, 200-300 years ago or 500 years ago. So any chance they got to flee, they did. Or, like in Australia's case, probably a lot of them ended up in jail or nut houses, so they were sent to Australia. And Aussies, I'm not hating.
And isn't that odd? Because all my life, my parents traveled, so I lived in Europe. And when I got older, I went from Middle East all the way to England, and I stayed, and I went to Australia for 10 years.
Yeah, it's Australia's just another. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just another heavy magnet for sightings, or for abductions. It's the way it seems to work. And I don't want anybody to take this out of context, because abductions happen worldwide in every country and every city around the world. I don't want to take it out of context, but there does seem to be places where there's higher concentrations. And for a long time, we thought maybe America was only having a higher concentration because more reports are being made. But now that I have, now that I have a show that hits 160 countries and organization that goes out to 40 we have directors with, so I know that's not what it is. Frankly, there's just more contactees can. That's why. And since they're all having children with other people, it's bringing more and more of them in. Because what happens is, let's say you start out with you have two kids. Well, they're abducting you and the two kids now. Well, those two kids have two kids each, so now they're abducting you and them, and now it's 6, 8 people. And then next thing you know, it's 16, then it's 32, then it's 40. After 100 years, you know, your family's grown to where they're abducting 1,000 people. After 1,000 years, your family's going to where it's 100,000, almost a million people in that one family line. So when they started with us as families, they don't need to go outside the family lines because they're so large now. I would imagine you could trace these abductions back to 6 or 10 families, and it's encompassing 15% of the population probably being taken now. So, and that's where it started from back then. They just, you know, they started early and they've been with us ever since. Why? Ooh, that's anybody's guess there. That's a show by itself.
Hi, I'm going to have to run, but thanks for the call.
You're welcome, and thank
you. Nice talking to you.
All right. I always enjoy when she calls. She has such a nice, pleasant voice, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. Sounds very nice. Mm-hmm. And I love the ones that aren't grating when they call, like Fran from whatever that TV show was.
Now, listen, she's one of my fans with the rock band, so I'm saying nothing bad about Fran Drescher.
But Fran Drescher is a hottie patati, man. Just that voice makes me...
Yeah, well, but, you know, she is an abductee.
Well, I don't doubt that at all.
Mm-hmm. Or she says she is. So.
No, I don't doubt it at all.
Look, the job study, I know you don't want to get into that. Well, let's take this call and then we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Doc again calling you back.
All right, Doc.
Well, I just wanted to tell him thank you. I went to his website, and I was really surprised how that is about the map and everything, about the information that was up there.
Now, so you know, all of the information in white and all of the maps, that actually comes from three doctors. Somewhere on there, it's Arthur Palmer. He's the actual doctor that put this together. ICAR took that information along with the database that we had and the people participating in blood type study and combined the two to see what they were side by side. While we were doing that, we found, you know, interesting things like, you know, how many are Rh negative, but it also gave us a view at the map to see how it spread around the world. So now we not only do we have an idea of who may or may not be contactees, but we actually have an idea where they actually might be concentrated at. It gives us a leg up on all the organizations out there right now, especially for research. And it also allows us to find directors in the right place. What's really more interesting about that is, since we did that, and for these hot areas, we've had directors sign on with followings of over 4,000 or 5,000 themselves. We just joined the organization. They just basically took their organization and merged with ours. It was almost, once that study was posted and they saw it, they were like, oh, hell.
Yeah.
This is us.
Yeah.
This is us, man, and here we are. So that's what all this has been about. It's you know, people say, well, you do it for you. Well, no, not really, because, you know, I'm pretty confident in who and what I am and where I am in life. So this is more for generations coming, for people who don't understand, but it's to be truthful about this. This is more for my directors than it is anything else. It is to help them find the people that will help us to learn why the hell E.T. is here and why E.T. is doing what they're doing. You know, because I got to be blunt about this. I don't hate E.T. I don't really have that big of a deal. But when it comes right down to it, when you come into someone's house and you take them, I don't care if you bring them to a birthday party. Mm-hmm. If you take them without asking their permission first, that's a violation.
Yeah.
So in that aspect, I don't feel like they give us the respect that we think we should have. Okay, and I had to say it that way because, frankly, they look at us like, you know, you would look at your chihuahua. So,
well, you know, I've talked about this. They treat us apparently pretty much like we treat dolphins and bass.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
You know, we take them, we capture them, we tag them, we put transmitters on them, we turn them loose, and then, you know, and we say, well, we're not doing anything to hurt them. But if you were the dolphin, you'd be pretty ticked off.
And you would be, and that's the thing. So, you know, whether you have good, because a lot of good experiences. I don't want people to think all of this is bad, because it's not. There is a lot of good experiences to go along with this. A lot of training, a lot of stuff you can understand, a lot of onboard ship stuff. For a lot of contactees who have gone through the awakening, and have moved towards the keeper stage, they really
what is that? Yes, well, twice you've mentioned that. What is a keeper stage?
Well, keepers are contactees that have reached an advanced stage. Usually, in some shape, form, or another, they're working with ET. Mm-hmm. Whether it's bringing on contactees or messing with the children when they're on board the craft, or helping with new things going on, or even dealing with other races, or helping in some of the many, many training programs they have running, they're actually involved. What's nice about keepers is they have a much higher recollection.
All right, we got to take a break. Joe, we have a caller on hold, but I want to give you the opportunity to finish what you were saying there.
Oh, let him go.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
All right. Hey, Kevin. This is Jason from Texas again.
Hello, Jason.
Oh, and I think I know everybody on the show tonight, actually.
Good. Actually, let this guy call in. Oh, my God. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is iCar's North American director, Jason Wilson.
All right. Go ahead, Jason.
All right, and thanks for the opportunity to be on the show. And actually, I was calling in regards to your next-to-last caller, Haya from Victoria. And I just thought that was kind of interesting because I noticed Joe kind of perked his eyebrows out at a little bit of her information, too. But I just think it's weird that I was talking with Heather Garish, one of our other directors, on the phone not an hour and a half or so ago. And I had mentioned this weird little statistical anomaly that we'd noticed at iCar. Actually, November Hansen and I first noticed it when, I forget which study it was, but we were parsing through some of the study, and she was just like, Jason, take a look at this data and see if it's kind of strange. And basically what this was a chart of about 70 samples or so of people, you know, what their location was, you know, what type of aliens they were visiting, and whether they considered their context positive or negative. And I noticed that out of North America in particular, there was a statistical anomaly that more or less involved women from Canada who were adopted. And I think that's really weird because, I mean, I personally know and talk to about a dozen people who fit this particular criteria, but there just seems to be some kind of weird statistical anomaly about Canadian women who have been adopted and the particular types and some of the quirks of the experiences they have. You know, at iCar, that's one, I mean, we've got access to a lot of this data, and you know, you get a big enough sample group and you start noticing weird little patterns for that. So I'd like to say to your guest, to your caller Haya from Victoria, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your story. I've talked to a number of other people from Canada who were also adopted too that have had some interesting experiences, and you know, I'd like to hear a little bit more from you. If you could get a hold of us at iCar, and this is something I almost never do. You think Joe is hard to get a hold of sometimes. I can be the same way, but if you could, drop me a line at instantkarma78@gmail.com, and I'd just like to hear a little bit more of your experience.
All right.
Boy, that's an all-time first. I don't think I've ever heard him give his email out online in all these years.
All right.
Oh, yes, he is, and actually, Hyde, he really is the person you should talk to him because he does handle those cases. Several of the Jennifers he turned me on to over the years. Believe it or not, there's like five Jennifers that were all abducted and adopted out of Canada. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time spitting that out. But that is the person to get hold to. I mean, if you can get hold of either one, and you can find him on Facebook too.
All right. Jason, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Very, very interesting. 623-444-5889. We have a flash message now from Etta in Australia. And I'm assuming Etta is a lady. But she wants to know if you have any information about contactees among our Aboriginal peoples.
I actually have a lot. Now, I said this earlier, tomorrow's guest is going to be Mary Rodwell. She's from Australia. Matter of fact, both guests is going to be Sean Breeze is going to be on with it. He's a contactee from Australia. Mm-hmm. So we're actually going to be doing this live on the air, but I'll tell you a little secret. There's a couple of groups in the United States. The Aborigines fit in with like South Americans, like the Naskins and some of the Toltec tribes. They got a lot of eerie similarities and a lot of the things they believe in the way they look at stuff. What's funny about this is a lot of the South American tribes happen to be Owen. Guess what most of the Aborigines happen to be? Coincidence? I don't know, guys, but it's a strange thing. There's a lot of information out there, and they seem to openly have some type of contact. I've interviewed probably not a lot. Maybe 20, 22, 23 Aborigines over the last 30 years of research. So you can imagine it's hard to get them to talk. But when they do, it seems to be very open in their society. It doesn't seem to be something they hold back on. They seem to talk about it openly. And they say, just like a lot of the Native Americans say, that they still have what they called wanted or called contact today, meaning that they can sit down around a fire, a family or a group, and call them to come down. Now, this isn't unheard of. I know contactees that can do this, but it's a very strange thing, and it's a very rare thing. So there must be, in those family lines, in the Aborigines and the Native Americans and the Mesoamericans, there must be a very strong tie to whatever alien group it is, or the blood ties must be very, very, very strong for them to just come down and take a whole group like that. Hell, as far as we know, that might have been what happened to several civilizations on this place.
Well, you know, everybody has heard of the Anasazi, but there's also in Arizona, the Hohokam. Now, Hohokam is a native word, I think, in the Pima language, but it means the people who were here and are not. That's all it means. The people that were here and they're not. And it's Hohokam. Well, the Hohokam are responsible for there being a Phoenix, Arizona, because they dug irrigation canals from way up north to way down there into that desert, and they lived and farmed in that area. They disappeared, just vanished. And of course, their homes eventually vanished because they were made of clay. So a lot of, not all of them, but a lot of them eventually vanished. And the canals eventually silted in. There was nobody tending them. And then after the Civil War, a Confederate veteran was headed out west to try and start life over. And when he got to the mountains and was resting and looking down into that valley, he saw some faint lines. And he went down and checked it out, discovered these are water channels. And he began to dig one out. And he got the water flowing again into the valley down one of those channels, set up a trading post for other people who are headed west to make his fortune. And that, my friends, is how Phoenix started. Phoenix relies today on some 130 miles of Hohokam canals as a major part of their water supply. But just disappeared.
It's strange how that just happens. They said, well, there's a lot of disappearance up there. You got the Hopis up there. You got all kind of things just went missing in that general area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from what I've heard from most of the scientists in other places, there doesn't seem to be any, like, disease-related reasons or anything along those lines. They just, poof, they're gone.
Well, you got to understand. Have you ever lived in Phoenix?
I've been there. It's a little warm. It's a little dry. It's not warm. Actually, I don't find the temperature that bad there.
I find 120 degrees pretty bad. I hate it.
I was there. When I was there, it was about 115, 116. I got to tell y'all, Phoenix, y'all got it made, man.
Nah.
No humidity. You don't know what heat is. That's all I got to tell y'all. If you ain't got humidity, heat ain't nothing.
I lived on an island where there was nothing but humidity, and I lived there for 2 years, and it cooled down to 105 at night. I know about all that, but I'm going to tell you.
I don't like that.
What happened was, you know, if you've ever lived in Phoenix, and somebody comes along and says, hey, you want to leave and go with us? You're gone. So that's what happened. The UFO came by, said to the Hohokam and to the Anasazis, you guys want to go with us? Yeah! Bam! They're gone, especially since the UFO was air-conditioned.
It will take you where there's some water. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they love that. Could you see trying to explain air conditioning to someone today? Man, it's definitely magic.
Yeah. Well, I consider it to be magic. It's wonderful. I like air conditioning.
And, you know, that's one of the things on the studies, by the way, is What are the ambient temperatures of spacecraft? What is it? Is there moisture in the air? Do you feel humidity? You know, how does it feel? What do the walls feel like? What do the floors feel like? I mean, we ask a lot of questions that nobody else asks, and we ask them to everybody that will answer us. And it's weird because there are certain areas of ships, like on the gray ships, that seem to be quite a bit cooler than where the humans mostly are. Where the humans are, everybody says it feels like early spring day, maybe mid-70s, somewhere, 75, 76, 77. Not hot, but not cold, just kind of comfortable, in the sense. But they said there's other places in the ships it's quite a bit cooler, probably 20, 30 degrees cooler. Not enough to freeze, but really close, maybe 40, 38, 40, somewhere around there, which I find odd. And it's different in the different ships, and the reptilians, they'll tell you, in the areas where the humans are, it's probably in the same area, somewhere in the mid-70s somewhere. The walls are cool to the touch, stuff like that. But when they go into the great libraries or they go into some of the viewing rooms, it gets quite a bit hotter and quite a bit damper. They don't ever see anything. Anybody ever tells me about seeing flowing water or anything like that? Even a lot of times it'll be underwater somewhere. They just tend to talk about the air is much thicker. And for southern people, when I usually hear it, it's like just before a hurricane, Joe. It's really hard because the air gets so thick down here before a storm that it's almost, with the high pressure, it's almost like, you've been down here. It's like breathing water. And they say it kind of feels like that. So, but those are usually places that humans aren't supposed to be hanging out.
Well, let's talk about the reptilians. Earlier, you started to tell us about the reptilian study.
Well, the reptilian study is a very funny beast because in the study, you have almost a 50-50 split. Now, we're hoping this is changing. We're upping this study some more, but right now, you have like a 50-50 split. You've got these aliens that are kind, almost Aguarian. Like, and then on the other side, you got this other group that are just basically vicious. If they want it, they'll just take it. They'll take your women, take your men, do what the hell they want. As far as I know, they ain't killing anybody, but they expect you to stand up for yourself. Meaning that if a big male grabs you, or a big female grabs you, one of the alphas, one of the ones with the tails, grab you, they expect you to stand up for yourself. Now, I'm a big guy. I'm 250 pounds, 5'10". Not exactly a little guy. Some 700 pounds, 6'8" reptilian grabs me by the ankle. What? Really? What am I going to do? Get up and punch him in his head? And he's going to probably use me as a rag after that. But the point is they don't want you to physically stop them. They want you to mentally stop them. In other words, they expect you to be
aggressive. How do we know that?
Huh?
How do we know that?
Because of the contactees. See, we've asked them. Contactees have all this stuff that has, and it's been times that we've tried things like stop. Just stop, whatever you're doing, stop, try to stop whatever's going on. With the reptilians, especially with the reptilian males, if you're very forceful in thought, very forceful meaning you really got to project it, they tend to stop. Now, the abductions won't stop, but some of the other stuff and some of the harassment will stop. It's almost like they're pushing you to see what you'll do. If you break down, start crying, lay on the ground, they're going to probably drop you off and you'll probably never see them again. So keep that in mind.
It's a good tactic.
But they're pushing you, and they're known to be nasty and cranky and the whole nine yards. The other side seems to be, like I said, almost like they're an Aquarian society. They're very laid back. It's almost like good cop, bad cop. Uh-huh. It really is. It's just like the population's like that, though. It's not just like two people. It's a very strange thing because at first we thought these were separate races or at least maybe colonies or something. But what we found out is when there's ceremonies going on, like some of the religious ceremonies, some of the other ceremonies, both of them are there. They look the same. They got, so I don't know exactly what's going on here, but they seem to be pushing, whereas the other ones seem not to be. And we don't have enough information to know why, because the ones that push you around don't tend to want to tell you anything.
I lived in a place one time, and I'm not going to say where, but this particular culture were the most docile, peaceful, wonderful people in the world, but they had a nut button. And you never knew exactly where it was, and you were never quite sure what it is you did that pushed it. But if you pushed it, they went nuts en masse. And maybe the reptilians are like that. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo, and we're talking about the reptilian study done by ICAR. As we went away for break, I said that perhaps the reptilians as a race, as a species, maybe they just have a nut button, and normally they're pretty docile, and then all of a sudden you do something that just hits that nut button, they go nuts on you. What do you think?
It's a good possibility is what it is. It's good as any other answer we have right now. People ask me, oh, you're supposed to know all of that. Well, we know a lot. Look, if you take everybody in this field and you cram them into one group or one person, ICAR probably still knows 12, 15 times what they do, probably 50 times what they do. The problem is, regardless how much we know, let's say we have 10% of the puzzle. We'll even go out on a limb and say we got 30% of the puzzle, okay? This puzzle is probably 2 or 3 million pieces, which means we've got 300,000 out of 3 million pieces. Okay, that's enough to kind of show you what the picture may be, but anybody who's ever done a puzzle before, a hard one, where a lot of the pieces are close in similarity and stuff, realize that you really don't always know what you got until you actually do the damn puzzle. In this case, we do know a lot and we understand a lot, but there is so much more that we don't know and we don't understand. And it's why we're ongoing. It's why it's ongoing projects and ongoing work and ongoing hypnosis. And by the way, we're hardcore in hypnosis, so it's not something we like to use. We do use it. It's just not something we like to use.
Why?
I'm not real trying. Well, because, over the years of being in this field, I've noticed too many so-called hypnotherapists have their own agendas, and they're not really doing real hypnosis. They're hypnotizing people, but it's like, okay, well, let me put you under Jane. Okay, Jane, what kind of extraterrestrial did you see yesterday, and what kind of spaceship was he in? Okay, really, you might as well just take that person and never speak to them again. You have ruined that individual. They are useless to anyone after that point because now you don't even know. I'll use our French director because, she's one of our directors, but her and I and Linda, we did something like almost 20 hours worth of regression over 8 days. This is intense stuff. The thing about it is the first thing is she came to see me because of a particular thing that was happening to her. She's by the way, ladies and gentlemen, y'all gonna love this. She had this beautiful man that used to come visit her, just overflowing, gorgeous man, used to come have all kind of anyway.
You're
really nice guy. Okay?
You're not supposed to be talking about my nighttime schedule now.
Yeah, so anyway, he'd come over and see her. And so she really wanted to know about him. So under hypnosis I asked her, tell me about the event that happened in this particular night. So she goes into it, we're talking, she's telling me what's going on, she's telling me what's happened. I said, well, now stop for a minute. I said, get a sense, get a smell, touch, feel, what do you feel? Does he feel like one of us? Does he feel like a human, like with hair on his arms or something like that? I said, really? I said, look up, stop looking down and look up, look at his face. And then I took her down another 4 levels and she opened her eyes and guess what? It's a big 7-foot reptilian. By the way, which she had no problem, which shows you if you're expecting something or aware of something, it's not going to do the damage. But her and I had many conversations about this prior that it may not be what she thought it was. So she was aware and alert of it. And she deals with the contact experience. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. Just because you think you're seeing something doesn't actually mean that's what you're seeing. That's why they're called cover memories. People think all the time, I'll be blunt about this, probably in a normal everyday abductee, 80% of what's in their head is garbage. In a normal everyday contactee, probably 60% of what's in their head is garbage. For keepers, it's probably the opposite way. It's probably 40% good, 60% garbage. But no any individual contactee, not one single contactee, has all the answers or understands all of it by any means. Frankly, even if they were to tell any of us, like myself, if they were to tell me everything, there was no possible way for me to even comprehend most of what's going on. It's beyond our intellectual and technological evolution at this point. So we can only hope to learn so much, at least now. And we are learning. I mean, we learn a lot. We got a lot of stuff we learn about agendas. We know a lot about their habits, what they're doing. We know that everybody who says they're from this solar system or that solar system is wrong because none of the names of their homes are pronounceable in any of the languages on this planet, at least as of now. Things like that we're learning. And we do, one of my favorite things to do, Kevin, is to get a question, get between 25 or how many contactees I can get together that week, tell them what I want them to ask. I send each one of them an individual letter, say, hey, can you ask me this next time you think you've been abducted? Start repeating this in your head every night before you go to bed in case you're abducted. Because what happens is when they're taken, because that question has been repeated and just repeated and repeated, mm-hmm. when they're taken, it's almost instant. When they see the alien, the question goes in their head. Almost all the aliens will answer without thinking about it. Sometimes it's consequences for that, by the way, but a lot of times they will answer without thinking about it. So if you send 50 people with the same question without telling them and they all come back and give you the same answer, well, it's a good chance that that's what's actually going on. You know, so that's been a way for us to cheat, by using our own contactees to ask direct questions to the aliens, but to do it almost on a subliminal level, so that, you know, that so we know what's coming back is pure information.
And we've only got a couple of minutes left before we have to close this. You said sometimes there are consequences. In the next couple of minutes, describe that. What kind of consequences?
Oh, well, sometimes the grays get really upset when you ask questions you're not supposed to. This is what's funny about it, Greg. You ask this, well, all three of the races, actually, you'll ask a question you're not supposed to, and they answer, and then they're looking at you like, did that human just snook at me like that? You know, so first off, they're kind of like the proud parent, but then they're like the angry parent. Then it's like, oh, no. So a lot of times, a lot of the punishments are mental endurances. They will really mess with your head. They will leave you. When they drop you off, you will feel like somebody has gone through your soul with a wrench, just ripping it back and forth. And basically, I've seen contactees in bed or on the floor for days afterwards, just bawling, crying, clenching, trembling, before they can actually get a grip on what's back. Because, see, they can cheat. They don't have to scare us by threatening us or beating us up. They can go into our head and just simply turn it on. So we have no control over that. And from what I hear from most contactees, it's a horrific experience. So, you know, we warn contactees up front that there are consequences when you do this kind of stuff. So we try to keep the questions to what we think won't be questions that they'll retaliate. A lot of times we're close, sometimes we aren't. You know, sometimes stuff happens. They have never killed anybody or anything like that, but they have. And the reptilians can be especially the big male, even the big alpha females, they will snatch you up off the ground by the scruff of your neck and just hold you up in air and say, and basically look into your eyes and say, did you just think, do what I think you did? Don't ever do that again, as they flip you upside down and hold you like that. So they can be physical, they can be mental, they can be both. But you can bet the contactee will not ask that question again. That will be the last time that question's asked. Also, too, there seems to be consequences for sharing training information when you're not supposed to. That, you know, we've ran across several cases, like in Jim Sparks's case, but we've run across several cases like that where there tends to be consequences for sharing information that was basically for your training purposes and not for anybody else's. They get hacked off about that from time to time. But I know you're getting close.
Yeah, why don't you give us the websites again real quick?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you said that, because my co-host said something about hurting me if I didn't plug her tonight. Guys and girls, don't forget, on Saturdays we do host News on a Flip Tide, 7 to 10 p.m. Central Time. My co-host is Stephanie Bonetti. Y'all should come check it out. Tree Sheridan's on there with us as well. Stephanie is a blast. She's what gives me my balance, and trust me, I need it on that show. Also, on Wednesday night, which is tomorrow night, I'll be hosting UFO on the Cover. I have Mary Rodwell and Sean Breeze on with us. And anytime you want any good information about alien abduction, remember, www.icar1.com or our www.icar1.homestead.com. Both sites are available. There is a wealth of information on both sites. Frankly, we couldn't cram everything into the new one, so we left the old one up because you can get to it. And then, of course, there always is the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And if you're ever in doubt and you ever can't find anything, you can either type in ICAR1 or just type in my name, and it will always lead you back to everything is interconnected.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks, but stay on the line with me for a moment. There you have it, folks. Joe Montaldo. As I told you, it's always interesting when he's with us. And we talked about a lot of stuff tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time.